Hello and welcome to Chai Can't Even, Project Zion podcast series where we chat with young adults about life, faith, struggles, and joys, and why they choose to stay active in community of Christ. I'm your host, Blake Smith, and today I'm really excited because I'm down at Bluff Springs Campgrounds, which is the campgrounds where I grew up, and I am with a young adult who is just absolutely on fire, and his name is Ethan Mitchell, and I'm just really glad to have him here with us. Welcome, Ethan.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Well, Ethan, we like to start off these episodes because we know that all of our listeners won't know who you are, so we'd like, if you wouldn't mind, to tell us just a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you better.
All right. So who I am now, I'm Ethan Mitchell. I'm 24 years old. I turn 25 next month. This year, I'll be starting my fourth year as a high school band director. And it's been going wonderfully. I teach over here in Florida. I went to the University of Southern Mississippi, where I got my degree in music education. And I've been an ordained teacher for 7 years. I was ordained the day before I went to college. And then my favorite Christian artist is Jonathan McReynolds. And my favorite show on Netflix is I Think You Should Leave.
I Think You Should what?
I Think You Should Leave. That's the name of the show.
Well, we won't get into that. I was going to ask you what that's about, but I'll have to look that one up. Now, I have to ask you a question that's not in the ones that I told you about, but I'm just listening to you, and I've been talking with you all week, and I didn't realize. So you're from Crestview, Florida, right?
Yes.
And you went to Mississippi to college, and yeah. You don't have the deep Southern accent.
It's
if everybody else.
I know. It's
how did that
weird.
How did that work?
You know, it's just because I think it's because my mom's from up north.
Okay.
And so, like, I didn't have it real bad.
You're not hearing it in the house.
And so, you know, I turned out okay. Now, it gets worse. Like, when I go to, like, spec or something, and I'm gonna bring it out on purpose.
But okay. Like... Well, I just wondered because I married a woman from the Midwest, and she has worked for 37 years to get that worked out of me. So I just wondered how who did it for you and how did it happen so fast? Well, again, it's great to have you with us, Ethan. I want you to just tell us a story and just kind of go through stages of life and how you got to this point. So what was church like for you as a child?
And so I saw a question and I said, I feel like I really need for someone to understand me completely, I think to understand, I got to tell the whole story. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about my family, just so you know where I'm from. My mother's family is a very pretty large family in the northern part of the church. Lots of cousins up there, Roger Rose, lots of guys up there. Those are all my cousins. My father's family is a very large family from the south that's also in the church. We've got a lot of Barnes cousins down here. And they met at Graceland in the 90s. And then just so also, I like when I had my evangelist blessing, I talked about this deep heritage that I had with the church. But I feel like the best part about growing up in the church as a child was... all of my best friends, my cousins, were all with me, and they're still my best friends to this day. We all got called to the priesthood around the same time. We all worked together. And so, you know, they're also my roommates right now. And so I grew up with a whole church family taking care of us, as well as best friends and real family, because we were half of us were related. We're all cousins somehow. We find that in the South. We're all cousins. And everyone took care of us. And so just for an example, I tried to do sports. You know, as you can see, I'm a band director, so the sports didn't really turn out.
I'm with you there, brother.
So I was on a city league basketball team, and my dad's a massive man. He's 6'6", and he played basketball all growing up, and so he was going to be my basketball coach. And my best friend from school was going to be on our team, so he drafted our team of 9, and 3 immediately quit, so we only had 6. And then in the first game, one guy rolled his ankle, so then we only had the 5, which is what you play with, and then we had some guys, one guy that would come regularly. And so it gets to be this point in the season, I think I'm like 10 or 11 years old, and I'm playing the city league basketball team. We're 0-7. We have not won a single game, and we were so bad. And we tried, like, some games were close, some games were not close at all. My dad went to the church and was like, the whole team, he told them, which is the truth. We were all 10 years and 11 years old, and you lose 7 times in a row at City League basketball, and you feel pretty bad about yourself as a kid. And so that my entire congregation came to our last game. We had about 25 people from our congregation there, so most of them, and they cheered for us. They went, "Yay, Ethan!" when I got the ball, and they didn't make too many like wincing noises when I airballed my threes or anything. But we didn't win that game either. We were 0-8 for our City League team. But I learned a lot from that particular. That's one quick moment that tells you. But then we had other congregation members who really just took church family and meant it, you know? And you talked about them as well, but Jake and Della from my congregation were huge for that. So before I was there was all of this wonderful work that they did with the senior highs and the junior highs, and they did all these fun trips, and we had Solid Rock and all this wonderful stuff. And as I was growing up, it was slowly, it was kind of going away, but when I got older, but as a child, I was still very much prevalent. And what they did is every Sunday, I had a sister, I have a sister, I should say. I have a sister and a brother and my cousin as well. But every Sunday, Jake and Della would pick one of us and make sure it was individually, almost never both, and take us out to eat separate and talk with me about what I liked, which was probably Transformers and monster trucks. Then they would take me out to their house, and we would work in the workshop. Like, they had a wood shop, and we would work in the workshop for a couple hours, and I would get to build something, and he would show me how to use the tools and how to really, just talk to me about life. And just so many good examples I got from that, just how to be, like how to exist as a person. And then, like, there was once they knew I like spicy food, and I still do love spicy food. And they took me inside. They picked their. I went out there. We picked tomatoes and jalapenos from their garden. Went upstairs and we made salsa, homemade salsa. And I got to take a jar home. And so there were these people in my congregation that just kept taking care of me as a kid. And then so I get to be like, I make it through elementary school, all great, and I'm an ideas guy. At that point in my life, I'm already an ideas guy. And so it got to be, I was baptized in the church, confirmed at 8, and I was a full member of the church. That meant I could go to business meetings. And so I was in this business meeting, and my pastor's name was Tom Biscavige, and we were voting on who would do what for the year. Like, the plan what events. And it got time to be our trunk or treat thing. And we said, who's going to do the Halloween event, the fall festival? Nobody raised their hand. So I raised my hand, and I was like, maybe 13.
Wow.
And I was like, I think it would be really fun. And I saw half the congregation gasp, say, like, appalled, like, this kid could never. And there was murmuring and stuff. And Tom shushed everyone and said, all right, Ethan, you're in charge, and I'll help. And Tom sat me down like 2 or 3 Sundays, and he just asked me what I wanted, and he'd write it down. And then I did what I could, which is I really wanted to have a Kool-Aid contest to see who could make the best Kool-Aid and who could make the best cupcakes. And so we had a Kool-Aid contest, cupcake contest, and some games that I wanted. And then what Tom did was Tom took care of everything else that I didn't see. Tom made sure there was food. Tom made sure everybody was going to be there and invited people, made sure they made all the announcements and stuff. Well, I got to help make the announcements too. And at the time, I was like, this sucks. I wish I was completely in charge. But I realized, no, it doesn't. Nobody would have ever let me do this. And so that's what it was like to grow up in my congregation. And was that from when I was able to talk, they knew They cherished. I felt loved, valuable, helpful. They were given. I was given tasks. I was allowed to take up offering. I said prayers in church. I was involved in my congregation from before I was baptized. And when as I grew, it was slowly add more things that I could handle until it got to the point where now I'm 24. I'm on the pastoral team for my church. I preach regularly, I preside regularly. And I do Bible school, I do all these things, and it's no longer, we can't let this, this kid's too young. Every Sunday I go to church, they come up to me and say, I'm so glad you're here. And so as a youth, that's like like what church was to me as a child. My parents didn't let me choose necessarily. But I didn't have to because I wanted to be there. So I was never given the option to not go to church. It was just like what we did. Because my parents were both there, my parents both went every Sunday. But as soon as I got there, I had my needs met as a child. And that radically helped me start. I had Bible verses. Oh, it was Wednesday night scripture services, and I'd invite my friends to Wednesday night scripture service because they went to their own churches
Right
on
on
Sunday.
Sunday.
Their parents, whatever denomination, and I was in the converting business, and so I just invited them to come on Wednesday nights because we always had food, and then afterward we'd play games, and we'd have prayer service and memorize some scriptures and like learn about some stories, and it was a lot easier to invite people to that than the regular church. Because most of them were free.
Yeah, so it sounds like there was just this really deep investment in you and the young people, and not just, it's okay, here, we'll let them do a token thing. But when you talk about Jake and Della having you over, picking you out individually, listening to you and responding, like letting you go and pick the tomatoes and the jalapenos, and really you knew that you were heard. Those are great things.
And there was like my current pastor, who asked me to be on the pastoral team, I remember when I was like 15, and I hadn't really talked to her that much. Like we were like, maybe she taught my Sunday school class once or twice. We had a board game day at church, after lunch. Everybody came back to play board games, and she asked me to play Scrabble with her because I was a word guy. That's what I did. I was good at grammar. I was good at reading. I loved reading, and so I was like 12, trying to win at Scrabble, and. That's the kind of thing that stuck real hard. And
So it's probably hard for you to say because I know you mentioned that it was not an option for you not to go to church. And I kind of laughed when you said that because earlier this week, and again, we're at this reunion, and I did not know that Matthew was your brother at the time, but I had said something to someone after the first night of campfire that I was so impressed that when you, as the campfire leader, asked for people to stand up and offer prayer at the end, that seven youth stood up to pray, and one was this really tall, teenager that usually is by that time too cool to do anything. And I said, so I was just really impressed by that. And someone said, yeah, because his mama would snatch a knot in his head if he didn't get up and do it. And for those of you who don't know Southern, that's just a figure of speech. But I get an idea of how non-optional it was for you.
I wasn't expected to participate. I was expected to behave, but like I said, that's kind of a Southern thing. But make sure I was yes sir, yes ma'am, all the way, and learned a lot.
That's great. So you mentioned about you and your cousins being ordained and coming up together, and being 24 years old. That had to have happened somewhere in that high school, college age. So tell us a little bit about that journey as you moved into teenage years and got you where you are today.
So I started getting a lot closer with my church members because I was they were coming to my concerts. I joined band in middle school, joined band, and I wanted to play jazz. I was a tuba player, and there was no tuba in the jazz band. And so I started taking bass lessons from a young adult in our church, or he was a young adult, probably like finished college or was in college. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I was taking bass lessons with him, and we played from his old book from the 70s or whatever. It was hilarious. But so I started taking these lessons. I started doing band. And so I got really involved in just high school in general, and but also really involved here. We start camp at the completion of third grade, not the completion of sixth. So we had junior camp, third, fourth, fifth grade, and so I went my third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade year. All the third graders lose their mama on the second day, but at the end of it, they have a great time. Middle school. Same thing, sixth, seventh, and that's the first time I ever brought a friend to camp. The one time I got somebody to go, I have a great testimony about that, about being left. I actually got left in a thunderstorm.
Oh my gosh.
So we had a wilderness camp, which was out in the wilderness,
Right?
no technology and no cell service. And we go on a canoe trip every year, and it was time to leave for the canoe trip, and I needed to step to the restroom, and I stepped to the restroom, and even my friend that I brought from high school or from middle school forgot I was there, and they all drove a mile and a half off and left me in the middle of the pouring, awful thunderstorm, and I couldn't do anything but repeat to myself. I was terrified, so it was just I had a mantra. It was God will protect me, and I was like, I was running in this rain through this forest, through the woods, and eventually they found me, and I've never seen somebody look more embarrassed than
I
that
bet.
kid. But anyway, and so I'm going through camps. I'm having these spiritual experiences. I started that those wilderness camps is that's when I started to figure out that I could probably sing a little bit, and then so they had me lead campfire at like 14 at those wilderness camps because nobody else could sing, and or at least was willing to sing. And so I get to be high school and going through my camps, and so I'm an ordained teacher, and part of my gift is the ability to see into people and like feel the just like kind of empathy, and I would call this the first instance of me this I was not ordained at this time. I would say the first instance of me fulfilling my office of teacher. I was probably 15, and the spirit came on to me in such a way that I could not pray for people. And so there's about 16 to 20 people. There were about 50 people at this camp, and I think I prayed for about 20 people individually. I would just walk around, and just because I was so moved by the service, that the campfire service we had just had, I prayed words that I didn't know they needed to be prayed for. I didn't pick people I was praying for except my best buddies, but even then I didn't know everything that was going on. And I like I said, and people, I don't know how you were praying. He said just the right words, and so that was like when I was 15, and I'm still going through. It's about this time when I get asked to share testimonies a couple times, not sermons, testimonies, and building up my band career, working. I joined like I'm in like four band classes at my high school, dual enroll in college classes, so I could make that happen. So I'd go to school from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. at night, and have rehearsals all throughout that. It was nuts. Tell you the truth. And my parents just love me and support me, and get to be. So I'm a summer birthday. So I turned 17. Then I started my senior year. So I didn't turn 18 till after I graduated. And so I turned 17, and I get to be my senior year of high school. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing with my life. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then it was at this point, I was like, all right, I'm going to go into music. Also, I should say I went to Spec. Spec was lovely. Love Spec. I performed at Spec a lot, and that helped me a lot. Just really enjoying living up like those rock star moments where I'm sitting there with a huge, like a actually good rock band on stage. Oh, those are great performances. I have them. I look back on them. They're wonderful. So I was 17, and my pastor pulled me back, and none of my friends had gotten called yet, but I was the first. And they said, we were called to the office of teacher. I said, we don't have any of those in this church. What is that? We didn't. I didn't have, there were not us. There were no. The last teacher we had had that was just that was a teacher that was not called to something else had passed away a couple years earlier. And I was like, what do you mean I'm called to the office of teacher? What the heck is that? Because I'm not a teacher. Not necessarily. And so that's when I found out that we had had several members who were teachers who were now elders or high priests or other things. And so I started going through my temple school classes. This is all during my senior year of high school. And so I did temple school classes. We did them one at a time. I think I started with intro to ministry. Then I think me and my cousin, this is when my cousin Reed gets called to the office of priest, and my friends Tyler, Tristan Ward from Baton Rouge get called to priest. And so there was also that, why are they priests and why am I a teacher?
Sure.
And then my last cousin, he finally gets called. He got a call around this time to teacher as well. After I finished my classes and stuff, and so graduate high school, sang at graduation, scariest performance of my life in front of like 10,000 people, a cappella. And it finally gets time, so I have my evangelist blessing, my first evangelist blessing, because I'm about to go to college and I'm scared. I decide to go to the University of Southern Mississippi, which is in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And what you need to know is that's 3.5 hours from my house, and 90 minutes from any congregation close to that. And so I was going away to a place where I didn't know anyone for sure. So high school graduate, I get called. So I get my evangelist blessing 2 weeks before I turn 18. I turn 18 on July 30th. A week later, August 6th, I get ordained. August 7th was my first day of college.
Wow.
And so I just get ordained. I get shipped off. My parents leave me at the college.
And you're not near a church.
I am this, no church nearby. I was given one name to find that was a member of the church that lived in Hattiesburg. Never found him. I tried. I tried.
Wow.
Tried. I don't know if they moved or what. Like it was literally a name. I was like, I don't know how to find this person. I'm not a detective. I'm a music guy. And so I start August 7th at marching band camp of college. And so now I'm surrounded in this room by 25-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, and it's a state your name and a fun fact about you. This is me and my section. I said, my name's Ethan Mitchell, and I didn't want to say I'm a priesthood member yet. So I said, but I did know that I was a patient man, and that patience was the key to peace. And instead of saying, I'm a pretty patient guy, I said, I'm Ethan Mitchell and I'm difficult to make mad.
Huh.
And boy, let me tell you, I got ordained that day. Then that week was, those weeks were some of the hardest weeks of my life.
How was that?
So this is one of my, I think it's one of the testimonies I feel very proud of. But I knew at that point, they said, oh, we'll see about that. You know how boys are. And college kids. And can't say it was hazing because we were in a group. More like bullying, which was weird than adults, but it was more just picking. It was more like a test, because I wasn't slighted. They didn't, that was like not a friend or anything. Like we still hung out. But, so it started. It's right here, like in between my bicep and tricep here on my arm. Every time they walked past me, every single person in the section was to punch me in the arm. Which you think, that's okay. That's meaty part. But after a week, my arm was purple and yellow. And
just to see if they could get you mad.
And I knew at that point that what I felt was Jesus turned the other cheek. I am not going to show them. I'm going to win. Me and my faith are stronger than this. And then I lost my name, and I got a lot more explicit names for several weeks. And then it gets to be game days, and we determined that game days were not we, but they determined game days were slap Ethan on the back of the head for good luck day. And so, all this time we were having monthly dinners, tuba dinner, and we acquired steaks. That was an interesting story too. But we'd show up. I'd make it a little dessert, and they found out very quickly that I was very serious about not drinking and not doing anything. They tried to slip me stuff, and I was smart, unfortunately for them, never worked. And they would ask me about this. I was like, I'm like, I'm ordained in my church. They're like, no way. And I was like, I am. And it gets to be October, and we're about to eat. And my section leader, who's agnostic, atheist, Ethan, I think you should bless the food. I said, what? I think you should bless the food. And everybody looked at me, and like, there's kids with, they're not kids, but there's adults with beers and stuff. They're like, we want you to bless this food. And I was like, okay. You know, like, I see where we were going with this. And I learned that I didn't have a congregation, but that's when it was made so obvious to me that my job as a teacher was not to peacemake in my congregation. Wherever I was, that was my congregation. My marching band, that was my congregation. Those guys, that was my congregation. I was in a music fraternity, my congregation. So find me off for anybody that wanted to know. That was my congregation. And anytime somebody needed prayer, I would offer. Was it often? No. But I can tell you this much. I got a call. Well, my best friend stopped partying as much. He said, I think I'm getting too old for this. And so we would go, and he would sit with me, and we wouldn't do anything. You know, like, we'd hang out. And then I got a call a couple weeks ago from one of my roommates I had in college. He's since gotten married and has since been hired by a church to be a music director and organ player. He's phenomenal. And he was not raised in any churches. His parents, it was very interesting. They had a funny life. But he called me, and he goes, Ethan, you were really the guy in college. And I said, what? What are you talking about? Because at the time, you know, I had a lot of struggles in college. And mental health was bad. Mm-hmm. Mental health was bad. I had counseling for 4 years. It was rough. Medicine, stuff like that. And so I didn't. And he said, you were talked a lot about this, how I was there. And he's like, it's crazy to think that you were Christian, but you didn't know me as a Christian yet. Because he has since converted to, you know, been baptized. And wow. he wasn't a Christian when he took that job at that church. Well, he had taken another church job and was like starting to like listen to sermons and stuff because, I mean, we were musicians. We needed money.
Right.
And so he gets paid to play the piano. He might as well listen while he was there. And so he wasn't a Christian until recently. And I went to his, I was the only one from college that he invited to his wedding. Not that everyone else sucked or anything. It's just, we were just really close. And he called me like 3 weeks ago and was like, I want you to know that like you meant a lot to me. And like that you saying all that. And so college, high school, that's when it was, I kind of developed my personality, and really started to figure out what it was the teacher had done. So I've been a teacher for 7 years. So, you know, I just kind of started scratching the surface, and I hadn't even gotten really into faith at that time yet. That's something that's kind of come in the last couple of years too. You know, I was a believer and all, but I'll talk about that eventually. But it was such a hard time for me to go through. I never got to make it. You know, Saturday night football games were tough on going to church on Sundays, and then being poor college boy, I remember months it was peanut butter jelly month or peanut butter jelly weeks, and paying gas to church seemed was enough for me to not go. And then you throw in COVID, and I actually was going, I was participating in more services once COVID started because I could Zoom
Right.
was had been made readily available to all college students. And so people asked me to be in services, and like I was in mission center services, I was in my home congregation services, I was in other people's services, and I did, we did the next faithful step thing for a while, and so it was, you know, I was getting to participate more and more, and all this time I finished my degree and it through.
You mentioned that your faith is something that's really built in the last few years, and yet it sounds like faith was a really foundational point for you. I mean, that's not everybody survives well college in the first place to be bullied and pushed and kind of prodded like they're going to make you their project, and yet you held strong through all of that. To whom do you give credit for that?
So that's that was faith. And who do I give that credit to? Probably my grandmother, my home family congregation. I felt proud of that, and I, you know, I wanted them to kind of know that. You know, well, I wanted to stay faithful, but I had just been ordained, and I knew I wanted to be, I wanted to reflect Jesus as a peacemaker. That's what I was called to do. As someone, like I told you, with this deep heritage in the church and this family that had supported me this whole time, I was ready.
So you've been through all this. Sure, you were raised in the church. You've got deep heritage in the church with the family connections and all of that. You've got friends and colleagues who are part of other traditions, folks from your band days in college who have gone out and gotten jobs in other traditions and stuff. What is it that's kept you in community of Christ?
That was something, you know, I had considered that in college. I was a priesthood member, and I was like, there's no church here. There was a Mormon church. So I started meeting with the Mormon missionaries, and I wanted to know the differences. I went to maybe one or two services there, but I couldn't get, I can't get behind it. You know, it's not like, you know, that's, I'm sure that's for some people, it's just, I know what having women priesthood members did for me. I know that having those priesthood calls not be given at a certain age. I knew that having, you know, I'm the Book of Mormon. I was on board. We studied the Book of Mormon when a couple of my Sunday school classes at the high school, which is tough. I've learned. Oh, I lived those ideals. That's why I when I'm a very reflective person. So I'm a deep thinker. So all this time, I was thinking to myself, "Who am I? What am I going to be?" And I took those role models from church, and I said, "I'm going to be this peaceful person like Jake. I'm going to listen to those who want to help, like Tom, which is my pastor that one time wanted me to do that thing. I want to be able to, be gentle with youth like Jacob, who was my counselor in senior high camp." And I felt all that, and I said, you know, this is who I want to be. And when I made this list of all these characteristics that I wanted to have when I died, what legacy I wanted to have, the church's values were evident in how to treat people and how to. And how I felt about different different questions that just come up. It was seemed like I was almost always siding with the church. It's crazy how that would go. And then just more recently, even more recently, I've had like, it's not that I wasn't fully awake and ready to respond, but I was. We've been talking about the sower all week, and I had been on this path. I graduated college and immediately started working. I got a high school job right out of college, where it had been run to the ground. Van had 30 kids in it. Everyone was mad. The band room was disgusting. It was a bad situation. We got fired halfway through the year, that kind of deal. And I come in 21 years old.
Wow,
In a high school, about to start teaching. They say, "We need you to make this." So I immediately rebranded, did all this stuff. And so it was hard for me to, oh, it's at this point in time where I had a second evangelist blessing, I should mention.
right.
And that did wonders, because I was really worried about this career, because I really want to do it right. And I can tell you, first year teachers always say their first year is horrible. Not my first year. My first year went great. I have nothing but to thank but God and my family for supporting me. It went so well, and the job went well. I've grown my band now. Next year I have 90 members, and so that's exponential growth in the last several years. But where I was saying is, when I got out of college and through college, college was really thorny. I couldn't grow because of all of these. I was kind of shackled by like depression, and like I was having panic attacks every day, and I couldn't grow my spirituality because I couldn't function very well. And then so I kind of the thorns moved off when I started working, but then I was past where I couldn't get anything done because I was working so hard. And I couldn't breathe, like I wasn't centered. And then I was planning events. I directed three men's retreats, and they were very spiritual for most people. I had this feeling after every one. I was like, I didn't, like the deep, like I didn't know if I felt that. I didn't feel it a lot. I started a camp here that we were doing, and I hadn't felt it yet. And then this year, I got kind of slapped across the face with the statement that sunk me in completely, like I said, like a reawakening of spirituality that set me even more on fire. Brother Gary Howard, he's an evangelist in our church, was preaching at the men's retreat this year, which is the first one in a while that I hadn't actually directed. And I had believed all these things growing up, and I believe Jesus died for me. And he looked at us, and I don't know if he was looking right at me, but I felt it. And he said, "Do you believe that Jesus died for you, or do you know?" And my mind was rocked. I was someone is such a deep thinker as myself. I was gone. Like they were like, "We need you to lead campfire." I was like, "I can't lead campfire right now. I'm having a crisis." And I completely went back, and I was like, "That's what I was feeling. That I kind of believed." I did believe, but at this point in time, that's when I knew deep down. I can say I knew what I was, but I as at that point when I was like recommitted myself and changed a lot about how I was living, which not like I was living poorly, but I just started tithing more of my time, spending more of my time in word in the scriptures, and both of my evangelical blessings said to study the scriptures and good books every day. And at that point in my time, I still wasn't, even though they said it twice. And
And sometimes it takes a few times for it to catch on.
I was like, "Okay, I got it, I got it." So I started doing more, and then that's when doors started opening, weird doors that I would have never expected to have opened. And it could all be coincidence, but it's not. I wasn't ready before for some other thing. And so that's why am I still in the church? It's because this church has been an absolute blessing to me. I love the ideals. I have a poster of the Enduring Principles in my dining room. I have, the mission initiatives. I've had those memorized since I was 14, 15, first spec probably, IYF spec 2014. I considered those. Like, I thought about those when I was in college. I was like, I wish somebody would have touched my poverty right now. I'm hungry. No, it wasn't that bad. But like I was like, I need to, I'm pursuing peace. And then developing disciples to serve. I mean, invite people to Christ in my own way. Because I know I don't like being told to do things. But I felt called to be this example, and that's so that's I have decided this church, I believe in it, and I do like the believe the thoughts about it, us not being one true church, and I do like there's as far as the Christian faith movement goes, I believe there are going I don't think if they go to other churches they're going to go to hell. I love my friends that go to other churches, and I know that we have talked about our faith, and they're just as spiritual. I went to a wedding that was not Community of Christ, and it was deeply spiritual, and I loved it, and it was my best friend from high school, and so I wouldn't I don't put down any other churches, not really. I'm sure they have their moments, but that's not what I'm supposed to be dealing with. I'm supposed to be the peacemaker, and they're all, I'm supposed to love, and we're a community of Christ. Whether that means, I'll tell you, I'll give you one example. I was at one conference last year, and I was with a group of young adults. There was an elder in our church. There was me. I was a teacher. There was a member from another. We were all across the nation. He was just another member. Really funny guy. Not a priesthood, but he was very business. He was in charge of business where he was at. We had a guy that was with us that had done. He was like part of like a satanic church for a while, but had was with checking out our church. The guys had been like. With like some been on like reservations and going through spiritual stuff on reservations, and I was like, "This is wild." I here I am, this small town Southern boy, up here. I don't know if I'm small town Southern boy. I am, but I'm up there, and I'm just I did that was not unnoticed on me that. Moved me a lot to like I thought a lot about what community meant at that moment and what community of Christ meant. It's a calling, and I agree or there should be a community of Christ.
Awesome. Can you tell us, so what are your hopes for Community of Christ?
I am I'll say it a million times. I'm a teacher. I'm an empath. That's just kind of comes with the trade. I feel a lot of things. I've been to two of the last three world conferences, and there is so much tension. It hurts. I feel like I have to go so I could just be to drop it just a little bit. I'm very excited for the next one. It's in June. I mean, so I won't be in school, so I can go. I had to take unpaid time off to go last year because I was 7 days off from teaching high school. But where my hopes would be that when I mean, world peace, but but even the smaller, just my hopes would be that we get to spend more time together, creating well, to use music terms, create harmony. And I'm from the South. There's a lot of dissonance in the way and how things have gone. And hurt growing up. It hurt. We had people walking out of stuff. We had preachers sat down. We had people that are no longer allowed to preach anymore. People that are and no, it was as a young man growing up in that young person, it was tough to see such, division. And while I do have my own opinions and stuff, I do appreciate the steps, the document that we have about the safe conversations that we've
Faithful disagreement.
faithful disagreement. And I think there's a certain level of, well, I don't want to call it pride, but it's kind of very similar where you have your it's a very, very rooted to you. And if it is rooted to you, that's okay. But it may not be rooted to somebody else. And we talked about completely different countries. And when that's the case, you're gonna butt heads just because it doesn't match what you're culturally used to. And it's so just my hopes for the church would be that a spirit of peace be with all of us as we talk with one another. And that's my hope within the church, but without outside, within our own church, but also that we are being that peace as a church for our communities. Whether there are churches preaching against us in those cities or churches working with us, I know I'm directing Bible school in a month, and I've had it on my heart to invite our LDS congregation in our town to that Bible school for whatever reason. Been on my heart for several weeks. So I need to call the pastor and invite him, invite their people. I'm invite several other this other denominations because it's not our denomination base. It's just Bible school. It's pirate themed. We've got a We're renting a $500 one and a half story water slide that's shaped like a pirate ship. You want
What
to
are the dates?
go? And so why would it's not it's not an exclusive church, it's an inclusive church, and that means so our hopes is that peace, and peace.
All right. What is it that you need the church to hear you say?
I'm not sure if it's the people listening to this that may need to hear this, but they can pass this on to their congregations. But do not lose hope. Keep growing the talents and gifts that God has given you till you feel you absolutely must share it. Share those gifts and bring Christ to your communities with the love and peace that is the Holy Spirit.
Very nice way to wrap things up, but I don't want to wrap it up completely because I just want to say, is there anything that you'd like to say that I haven't asked?
I've loved having you down here this week. It's been wonderful. And I'm grateful. One of the things I love are creative solutions to ongoing problems. And I love to find out. I had no idea that you had the podcast was going on. And I knew that there are other podcasts going on, and I was excited to hear that there were people that were part of this community, about this podcast community. That is the community of Christ in itself.
Yes.
And it's a creative way to answer, different
calling. So,
great. Well, Ethan, I can't say thank you enough. It has been a pleasure to be with you this week as well, but especially for you to take the time because you've got some significant roles here at the reunion. And for our listeners who might not, I realize that I've mentioned reunion a couple of times, and we may have some of our listeners who don't know what that is, but it's a multi-generational family camp that has been a part of our tradition for a long time. And Ethan has some roles here at the reunion and family camp that we're at. And so, Ethan, I just appreciate you really taking the time to be here and to watch you in your ministry this week.
Thank you. Thanks so much, man.
And special thanks to our listeners here at Project Zion Podcast. You've been listening to a Chai Can't Even episode here with Ethan Mitchell, and it's been a pleasure to be with him. And it is a pleasure, as always, to have you join us here at Project Zion Podcast. If you'd like to hear other episodes of Chai Can't Even, please go to projectzionpodcast.org, and you'll find a series drop-down menu in the upper bar. And you can just scroll down to Chai Can't Even, and that's where you'll hear more of these. But also in that list, you'll see all of the other series that we offer. There are over 700 episodes there on the website. Feel free to go through those and join us on Tuesdays, Fridays, and Sundays for further episodes as we move into the future. Thanks for joining us, and have a great day.